for standing by, and welcome to the Axis Bank conference call, where I'm joined by Eigal, CEO of Axis Bank, who will today be presenting the company's interim results for the six-month period ended the 30th of September 2008. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today. I would now like to hand the call over to your speaker today. Please go ahead, Eigal.
Thank you very much, Elaine. Good afternoon, distinguished ladies and gentlemen. As introduced, my name is Aigoje Aigimokwede, Group Managing Director of Axis Bank PLC. I would like to welcome to this conference call all our investors, particularly our investors and our analysts, of course, which we have arranged in order to review the bank's performance in the second quarter of our 2008 financial year. Now, for some of you, this may be the second time you are participating in our conference calls, which specifically address quarter-to-quarter performance. For those of you participating for the first time, it is our tradition at this point to have our team introduce themselves. So I would like to ask my colleagues to quickly introduce themselves, and then we'll go on with the call.
Good afternoon. My name is Herbert Migwe. I'm the Group Deputy Managing Director of the bank.
Good afternoon. My name is Tawukeme Koroye. I'm the Executive in Charge of Operations and Information Technology.
Good afternoon. Oladipo Fatai, the Company Secretary.
Good afternoon. Dr. Abolo Emmanuel. My name is the Chief Economist of the bank.
Good afternoon. Ebenezer Olufowosi, Executive Director, Investment Banking.
Good afternoon. Sheikh Mabai, CFO of the bank.
Thank you very much. Now, we have a 22-slide presentation, which should have been posted on our website first thing this morning. I understand that we had some technical problems which delayed this, but I am aware that it is on our website now. I hope that we have all had access to it. We have three key aspects to our presentation, okay? And on page 2, or slide 2, you will find the three thematic aspects of the presentation. First, we are going to talk about solid financial performance in the second quarter and the fact that it is sustainable through to the end of our financial year. We are also then going to go on to the issue of our balance sheet from a funding and liquidity standpoint. And lastly, we will look at macro issues, particularly as regards Nigeria and how the current global financial issues, you know, will impact Nigeria and its operating environment. Slide 3 simply captures the results of the second quarter. And from a highlight headline perspective, pre-tax profit was about $130 million approx at 15 billion naira. We have maintained our cost-to-income ratio leadership at 49%. We are still the lowest cost producer of all 24 banks in Nigeria. You will find that we have not focused on balance sheet growth. We have focused during the period actually on maintaining a healthy balance sheet, both in terms of mix and asset quality and cost. Total assets and contingents are about $7 billion, over 800 billion naira. Tier 1 equity in excess of $1.5 billion. We have maintained capital adequacy ratios in excess of 30% and liquidity ratios in excess of 40%. Basically and essentially, we're on track to meet and exceed our prospectus forecast. Now, I must also mention that we have, as management and the board, commenced the conversion of our accounting to IFRS standards. And this will reflect in our year end, this current financial year end. So in terms of our accounting and our presentation of financials, we will be adopting IFRS policies. We would be the second bank, I believe, in Nigeria, you know, other than, of course, the foreign banks, to do so. We are also in the process of finalizing a request to shareholders to adopt a December year-end. You will recall, of course, that the central bank had mandated all Nigerian banks to adopt December as their year-end. And subsequently, in the course of the year, had basically withdrawn the circular, leaving banks to their own volition to determine which year-end they wanted to adopt. We are likely to adopt December 2008 and thereafter 31st December as our year-end. I would only like to say, in terms of highlights, that now for the seventh year running, it appears that we are going to maintain our record for triple-digit growth. I would now like to ask the Chief Financial Officer, Sheyi Kumakwai, to take us through the income statement and a few other slides thereafter.
Good afternoon once again. I'll take us through slide 4 to 8, which is essentially highlights of the income statement. So I'm now on slide 4. Slide 4 highlights quarter-on-quarter performance on income statement for 2007-2008. It also shows a comparison of the second quarter performance to the corresponding period last year. If you look at the pre-tax profit, we have continued to achieve a triple-digit growth. Interest income was up by 169%, largely on the back of about 120% loan growth. And as I mentioned, we have fed lightly to our cost of funds. Net commission and fees was up by 38%, largely as a result of tightening in fees, generally in the corporate and commercial client segment. Operating expenses was up by 93% on the back of our increased bank expansion, which we talked about more in the other slides. Staff numbers and in general rising cost of doing business. However, what you see is there's a net growth of about 102 in net operating income, which more than compensates, and that's why you see that we have performed to achieve the triple digit numbers on the at the pre-tax profit level. I'm going to slide 5. This highlights the development of our net interest income over a three-year period, quarter two as compared to full year, as well as the contribution of business segment to the net interest income. If you look at the pie chart on the right, you will see that commercial bank accounts for 61% of the net interest income, institutional bank accounts for 37%, while investment bank accounts for 2%. Largely, what you're seeing playing out here is our, you know, value chain management strategy, which ensures that we bank the chain. And what you see is that the commercial bank level, the spreads, you know, are better, and therefore, even though the exposure to the large corporate in terms of volume on between commercial and national bank, non-national banking side, but because of the spread, you find that they are contributing more on the net interest income of the bank. I'm going to slide 6. Now, slide 6 just further breaks down the net fee, commission, and FX income. Breaks it down to the various business segments. Investment banking accounts for 16%. Institutional banking accounts for 44%. You can see, you know, the fee side, which is expected, you see that this has turned a bit in terms of contribution. While commercial bank accounts for 40%, you also see the development of this fee line from 205 to, you see that this has also grown, you know, on a triple digit basis as we've seen on all our income lines. I'll go to slide 7. Now, I talked about cost to income. What you see is in comparison of our Q2 over a period of 3 years vis-a-vis the full year. You said that over the for the last 3 years, cost to income ratio has, you know, come down from something like 71%, you know, down to 49% this current quarter. The strategy that we want to ensure that we continue to maintain a very, very low cost to income ratio. As I mentioned earlier, we have the lowest cost to income ratio in the industry, and that's one of the reasons why we've been able to turn out the triple degree growth that you're seeing. Also, if you look at loan loss expense as a percent of interest income, this has also continued to come down. This slide highlights the improvement in our risk management process. The charge-off rate has come down from about 15.13 to 4.9, you know, in quarter two. We expect that this will this trend will continue, and we maintain this trend to the end of the financial year. I'll go to slide 8. Slide 8 highlights the consolidated performance of the group. You see the first column, which is the various income lines, parent, group, and the various banking and non-bank subsidiaries. Now, if you look through the what has been presented, the parent activity level is at 15.2, while the group is at essentially what has happened is that we have a number of startups. I mean, UK, Zambia are essentially startups, and that's why at the group level you find that it is below what you find at the bank level. This is just a snapshot of, you know, we believe that by the end of the year, this trend, we should be able to see the group perform better than the bank. All right, I'll hand over to Mike, who will take us from slide 9.
Thank you. So we're on slide 9, where we're looking at the contribution to performance by business segment. And what is interesting, even as we continue with our business reviews internally, is that even though our investment banking business has not achieved the type of contribution that we expected, because our contribution expectation was actually higher than 10%, and I'll explain why, we are actually surprised in a pleasant manner that, you know, they've been able to contribute 10% to PBT just as they did, you know, in the first quarter of 2007. Essentially, as you're aware, you know, and as we shared with those of you in our last conference call, we have ramped up our financial advisory and our capital markets capacity very strongly in Access Bank. And this is as part of the process of ensuring that we can give the complete range of services to our top corporate clients. What has happened, of course, during the period is that the capital markets have witnessed significant weakness, and therefore new offers and new transactions during that early period by, you know, the more sophisticated corporates basically dried up. On the other hand, though, of course, because we have that capacity, significant opportunities are now beginning to emerge in terms of corporate deleveraging, corporates looking at acquisition opportunities, and so on. So essentially, if you looked at the investment bank, for example, the income came from FX trading and fixed income, you know, treasury activity. If you recall, as Shehi presented, our FX income quarter-to-quarter increased by 35%, largely on the back of the type of things that our guys in our treasury, which report to the institutional bank, were doing. Now, if you look at the two pie charts, you will find that institutional banking, which is the largest contributor to profits, institutional banking has reduced from 62% contribution in 2007 to 55%, whilst our commercial bank has increased, you know, commensurately. And this is largely for two reasons. The first is that as we open more branches, the liability base of the commercial bank, you know, increases. The second is that this is the success of our, what we call our value chain management strategy. If you recall, during our last conference call, we explained to you how we start from the corporate, and we use that corporate to dominate the chain. In other words, dominating their staff, their distributors, and all other participants in the chain. So what it essentially happens when we sign on a major corporate, take for example MTN or Nigerian Breweries, initially the corporate bank, you know, sees a bump in its profits and of course in a share of total bank profits. But then as you begin to maximize the opportunities along the chain, that mix, you know, begins to change a bit. Now also I'd like to point out something on slide 9. You will notice a loan loss expense of $1.2 billion under the institutional bank. And you would also have observed earlier on, I think on slide 4, that she shared with us, an 80% increase in loan loss expense between quarter 2, 2007 and quarter 2, 2008. Now, largely what we have done here is that we are taking a general provision against, as a precautionary measure, against our margin facilities to stockbrokers. Now, these are not facilities that are impaired from a prudential guideline perspective, but, you know, as we will talk to our asset quality later on, we are dynamically and on a day-by-day basis, you know, basically looking at our exposure to players in the capital market. And, you know, we are saying to ourselves, you know, if we find that we have made general provisions and they are not required, you know, we are in a much better position than those who are taking more liberal stances on such issues and then may have to be taking provisions at the end of the year. Now, on slide 10, I would like us to start with the lower bottom half of this slide. And you will see that the second quarter NPL to total loan ratio of 2.25 is quite strong. Now, if you look at the pie chart on the upper right-hand quarter, upper right-hand corner, you will see that our lending essentially has gone to the oil and gas sector. And in the oil and gas sector, we're talking about the majors, the downstream majors, AP, Total, Oando, etc. You will also see that manufacturing takes a big chunk. In manufacturing, we'll have the likes of Dangote, flour mills, Northern Nigerian flour mills, you know, the breweries, and so on. You also see communications. What is transport and communications take 11%? It's more communications than transport. We don't lend much to transport. And it's largely loans to MTN, Zain, which is Celtel, etc. Now, the general commercial business, which is 14%, is actually the distributors to these major manufacturers and major telecom operators that we've just discussed in line of our value chain strategy. And then financial institution, of course, is a combination of capital market operators, non-bank financial institutions, and, of course, exposure to banks. Now, the cumulative provisions on our NPLs now is 151%. We follow prudential guidelines in Nigeria, and Access Bank is, follows prudential guidelines strictly, which means that if facilities are 90 days past due, we take a 10% provision. If they are 180 days past due, we take a 50% provision, and then 1 year past due, 100% provision. Now, you will find also, interestingly, that the increase in our lending activities was driven largely by the surge in commodity prices in the first half of 2008. So, interestingly, our lending activities have not been increased as a result of new names. It's more an expansion. For example, if you look at the oil and gas area, you know, we looked at oil prices ranging between anything from 100 to 140 dollars per barrel. You know, and you know, that caused a 50% increase in the loan volumes for them to maintain, you know, the cargo sizes that they were bringing into the country. Now, if you look at the table in the upper left-hand quadrant, you will see something called trade credit facilities increased by 81 billion naira. Now, these are foreign currency facilities that we have from our correspondent banks and one or two multilaterals who also, you know, provide on-lending arrangements for trade, for example, the IFC and the FMO in The Hague. Now, these are matched exposures against MLCs for the importation of goods and services into Nigeria by our top corporate clients. And once again, like I said, one area, one significant area where this has played out is, for example, in the oil and gas, you know, business. Essentially, if you look at the table, you'll find that liquid assets still take a fair, you know, proportion of this balance sheet at over 160 billion, cash and short-term funds plus government securities. And the trade facilities are self-liquidating, you know, exposures, which are also highly liquid. And then, of course, you have our loans and advances, which has also grown quite aggressively. And then you see the other, you know, asset classes, you know, thereon. Fixed assets is growing, even though we have sufficient capital to support fixed asset growth, you can also see that it is growing in a very, very, very structured manner. If you were to compare Access Bank's fixed asset schedule with that of our peers, you will find that we have been extremely prudent in our acquisition of assets. Our long-term investment book largely consists of investments in subsidiaries, investment in affiliate companies, and so on. Now, on slide 11, our bank is described by many as a bank that has a young team, an aggressive team, a dynamic team, but they also fail to mention that the bank has a somewhat cautious team when it comes to lending. We like to think of ourselves as youthful and energetic when it comes to business acquisition, but quite wise and cautious when it comes to risk taking. And our cautious approach to margin lending, which is an activity that, by the way, every Nigerian bank, just like several other banks, if not all banks globally, you know, participated in up to this point in time, has begun to pay off. Now, if you look at the upper left quadrant, you will see what we call analysis of total margin loans. And let's start there. Total margin loans for us includes the loans that we've given to stockbroking firms who either lent to their clients or took positions, leveraging on their equity. And the total amount of those loans as of September 30th was 55 billion naira. And the total collateral in terms of the value of the underlying securities, which are quoted shares, was 70 billion naira, giving us a coverage ratio of 125. The number of obligors was 77. This is also important in the sense that in terms of managing the relationships at the time of market turbulence, you know, we don't have hundreds or thousands of clients, you know, to manage. So the cost of remediation is not as difficult as it is for some of our peers. Now, if you look just below that, you have a box that we have described as margin loans with two ways out. We have two categories of margin facilities. This box describes those facilities that were never intended to be repaid from the liquidation of the underlying securities. And there are a number of scenarios in this regard. For example, sometimes when a company is doing a public offer, it wants to have facilities for its key management staff and its directors. And we then assess their salaries to determine their ability to retire those facilities. Also, we have situations where, take for example, members of the chain of a large corporate want to participate in a public offer. They could be the transporter supporting that manufacturer. They could be their distributors. Also, we look at their profits over time to derive their ability to service such facilities. And then finally, of course, we have instances where the primary or the principal owner of a large group of companies also approaches us for facilities to acquire shares, and we look at their cash flows. Now, what this does for us is that in most instances, we actually have two sources of security: the underlying security by which, you know, their core facilities are running, for which we have coverage, as well as these shares. And over time, as they retire the facilities used to acquire the shares, it then gives us a significant cushion against their core facilities. Now, these loans have 16 billion naira in value, and we have collateral of 19 billion naira backing those loans. Now, in terms of our margin loans with one way out, a single way out, which is the disposal, if you like, of the underlying assets. This is about 40 billion naira, and we have collateral of 51 billion or 52 billion naira as at end of September 2008. We track this every day, and thus far we have been able to maintain a margin requirement in excess of 125%. Now, with the market, the change in market pricing methodology on the stock market, whereby prices can move 5% every day, we are seeing an accelerated rate of asset diminution, at least from a price perspective, even though, as you will find, the fundamentals do not, you know, support this reduction. But we find that even as we speak, even today, our coverage is still in excess of the margin facilities. On page 12, we look at the liability side of our balance sheet. Now, I'd just like to talk to the key challenges that are facing international banks today. The reason for this is, of course, you would locate your worries about any bank's balance sheet from that perspective, particularly given that, no nation seems to be immune from the global financial crisis. The key challenges are inadequate capital base, liquidity challenges, particularly given the fact that there is no interbank market the interbank market is highly volatile internationally, and then, of course, the exposure that banks have to what you call toxic assets. Now, interestingly, there are calls for banks internationally to do things in a more boring manner. And once again, I guess, maybe because, in developing countries our regulators tend to be a little more conservative, we have conducted our business in a manner that, has basically meant that these three challenges that are facing the international banks, Access Bank, does not, face those challenges to any degree like what our international counterparts are facing. Now, if you look at our deposit base, you will see that as at 2007, and when compared to now, if you're looking at our core deposits, which are, in other words, nothing to do with bank funding, whether local or international, we have dropped from 352 to 286. Simply put, we took a decision at the beginning of the year that all non-bank financial institution deposits that could be linked or that were in our balance sheet that came from Nigerian or entities that had bank parents, we returned because we found that this was too volatile. So in other words, if First Bank has a non-bank subsidiary in the business of asset management or in the business of mortgage banking and so on, and we had deposits from such an institution, in the first and second quarters of this financial year, we returned such deposits. There were two reasons for that. One, the cost of funds of such institutions was too high, and the second was that we did not want to in any way be dependent, or let me not even say dependent, to be exposed to interbank funding. Now, this also implies one or two things, or puts us in a very strong position, because we look at our average deposit rate, and we're 3% below the market. Now, this has meant, of course, that our net interest margin has been very strong, but it also implies that we can go up, or we can increase our deposit book without going beyond rates that are currently paid by our peers, or in fact, actually, in certain instances, by banks that are larger than us. The other interesting thing in our balance sheet is what you look at correspondent. This is a spelling error on the table above. Correspondent bank funding of 115 billion naira, which is actually in dollars. You are talking about just under $1 billion. And essentially, these are funding the trade exposures, like we told you, to the likes of Total, African Petroleum, and other majors in Nigeria. Now, from the capital adequacy standpoint, if you look at the shareholder equity graph, our capital adequacy ratios as at our year end 2005 was 24%. Just before we did a recapitalization in 2007, we went as low as 12%. Immediately after our recap, we were in excess of 40%, and today we're in excess of 30%. Now, you know that international banks are struggling to maintain 8%. So basically what we want to show you is that we have a very, very robust balance sheet, both on the asset side and also on the liability side. Slide 13. Basically, it's an equity overview. We give you our 6 months, you know, trading history over that period. As we know, today our share price is 8 naira 40 kobo thereabouts. And you know, if you look at the trade ranges, our share price has taken a hefty correction as the Nigeria Stock Exchange has corrected. Our market cap today is 136 billion naira, whilst our shareholders' funds is 171 billion naira. That means that we are trading below price, below book. It's ridiculous. Because if you look at our liquid assets, for example, and clearly from our balance sheet, our equity has not been fully deployed either in form of fixed assets or so. Our equity, you know, is sitting on our asset book, you know, at least 70% of it in risk-free assets. I mean, how can we trade below book? If we were to do a liquidation value of Access Bank, okay, at worst we would be at book based on our balance sheet. So in other words, shareholders are saying that they are ready for us to take 79 kobo of every dollar, every naira that we have invested in Nigerian treasuries and return it to them and eat the difference. I mean, it's illogical. Now, that just, you know, tells you that the fundamentals of our business are not reflected in our current share price. This is not just in Access Bank's case. This is in a number of other, you know, banks and financial institutions. And simply put, the confidence and fear that you know, has characterized the international market has seeped fully into our Nigerian capital market. Of course, it therefore means that this is a buyer's dream. So for those who are liquid in a market like this, it doesn't take too long for you to know, you know, the type of returns. If we are looking at a dividend of in line with our prospectus of 73 kobo, you know, if this price is maintained, you are looking at dividend yields of 10%. You know, I mean, I think, you know, it belabors the point. And if, as may happen, the market continues to trade in this illogical manner, you know, you could see dividend yields at 20%. On equities, that's ridiculous. I mean, if you had dividend yields on preference shares and so on, there, you could talk about that. But if it's, you know, on ordinary shares, it's, as you well know, that's ridiculous. So, therefore, you are finding a great deal of mispriced assets, you know, beginning to come available today. Now, from slide 14, we talk about our funding. And in detail, you look at slide 15 and we'll talk to that. You have two pie charts, one that has the funding breakdown and the other that has the deposit mix of the bank. And, you know, one thing that would come clearly to you is that whether from a product standpoint or from a liability source standpoint, you will find that clearly we have avoided concentration in funding. We have a well-diversified balance sheet, some unique aspects of which are, for example, we are the only bank in Nigeria that has 3-year money in its balance sheet, which is our convertible bond. We have committed lines of credit of $800 million. I'm talking about committed lines available for a year from international banks. We have committed lines of credit from DFIs of about $100 million. Now, what is important is that you do know that DFIs are immune, at least as far as our experience has been, from the vagaries of the international market. So we haven't had and we do not have any issues of inability of banks to maintain their commitments with regard to 10 projects that have already commenced, etc., etc. 27% of our funding comes from Tier 1 equity. So it is very clear that, you know, we have a very, very robust and diversified, you know, source of liabilities. Now, on page 16, or slide 16, we just talked to the potential for expanding our liability base. Over the quarter, we opened 120,000 new accounts. We have established several relationships with major corporates in the brewing, telecoms, FMCG, and other sectors. And what is key about this is that, and I will link this to banking subsidiaries, that as we do this, for the multinational or African corporate powerhouses, a relationship that is opened in Côte d'Ivoire means that that relationship would be extended to the corporate sister or affiliate in Nigeria. We also have a number of new delivery channels, branches and ATMs, quite significant growth. In fact, actually, in the period, our branches grew by 10%, and our ATMs grew by, I think, 15-20%. And considering that we have the highest branch and ATM productivity in Nigeria, once those new delivery channels stabilize, you can begin to see their potential for generating liability. In terms of headcounts, you know, 370 people have joined the team. And also, again, we also have the highest staff productivity of any bank in Nigeria. So once again, you know, you can see that as we begin to leverage these resources, human and otherwise, the impact on our liability base will be obvious. We have also described to you in the past, and also on our annual reports, our value chain framework and our one bank strategies. Our expansion is driven primarily in line with those strategies. Finally, of course, Access Bank's commitment to ensuring that it has the very best people in banking in Africa and perhaps maybe internationally continues unabated. I would now like the chief economist of the bank, Dr. Emmanuel Abolo, to talk through some of the macro issues before we bring the presentation to conclusion.
Yes, thank you very much. Good afternoon once again. I'll be taking you through slide 18 to 20. Slide 18, that is a snapshot of the macroeconomic fundamentals of the country. And quite clearly, that slide shows that the economic fundamentals are quite strong and reassuring. Now, if you look at the positive aspect of the economy, you will see that real GDP grew by 5.4% in the first quarter of the year, and that has gone up to 6.65%. And it is estimated that this will come up to 6%. It will come down to 6% at year end, but again, move up to about 6.3% in 2009. Now, the gross external reserve position is quite strong at $63.09 billion currently. And then we have been able to maintain a very strong and stable exchange rate over a very long period of time. And that is supported essentially by the level of reserves, which I have just mentioned. Then more interesting, the FDI inflow of about $18.5 billion as at August 2008 is quite significant. Of course, the falling commodity prices have resulted in cheaper imports, and that, of course, would mean that there will be substantial improvement in our terms of trade. Now, on the negative side, we have concern about the falling crude oil production as a result of militant activities. And then, of course, we have cut down on our exports just in response to the last OPEC decision. We cut down on exports by 5%, and, of course, that is going to lead to declining oil revenue. Inflation is also an area of concern, which moved from 7.8% as of March to now to 13%, which is quite worrisome. Now, in the Nigerian Stock Exchange All Share Index has declined by 43.5% between March and October this year. And then finally, there is increasing weakening confidence in the banking system. But essentially, the point of this slide is that the macroeconomic fundamentals of the country is quite strong and right to a large extent. Now, slide 19. There we just try to give a picture of what the impact of global financial crisis have had on the Nigerian banking system. That is just to drive home the point that the banking system in Nigeria is not entirely insulated or decoupled from what is happening outside in the rest part of the world. There has been a reduction in home remittances in terms of wholesale transfer. We have also witnessed a diminished access to credit lines, both for trade and debt finance. Of course, withdrawal of foreign investors, which has been due to liquidity pressures at home, also have serious implications for the economy. Our foreign reserve, which is the U.S. dollars, will only be at risk if the U.S. government defaults, which is very unlikely. Then, of course, because of the increasing job losses, which many advanced countries are witnessing, we begin to see a return of surplus talent to Nigeria, and that has been quite significant. And then finally, the Nigerian banks with their international presence now viewed as good risk. Then the last slide, which I think will be of very, very good interest to you, is the key developments in the Nigerian stock market. A lot has been written in that area, but essentially I would like to draw your attention to the fact that the stock market recorded a massive plunge in all market indicators between March and October, and essentially it has lost about 43% of its market value. And then the capital market volatility has led to reduction in confidence, has led to confidence crisis, and that is beginning to slip through to other aspects of the economy. That is because of the interlinkages to the system. Then banking stocks account for 65% of the market capitalization. And therefore, what that means is that the industry has taken the worst hit in terms of market capitalization. Now, efforts have been made, very serious efforts have been made to stabilize the market, and that is why, a team of operators, government and operators in the banking system, including market regulators such as the Central Bank of Nigeria, the Security and Exchange Commission, and the Nigerian Stock Exchange, they came together to put in place some measures. Well, the impact of these measures was positive initially, but we are beginning to see a situation where there has been a decline in prices, and that has continued on a basis. Now, the banking industry exposure in terms of margin facilities, both direct and indirect, to the stock market is very, very significant, we must admit, in addition to the fact that the industry accounts for significant market capitalization, which currently stands at about 8.23 trillion. But as a bank, our bank, Access Bank, margin lending exposure is currently at about 55.7 billion. But we have a very good collateral to back this up, which is about 69.8 billion, and that represents 125% coverage. Now, the last point here, which we need to slightly amend, is just to drive home the point that because of the confidence erosion of confidence in the capital market, we think that has now dovetailed or has not slipped through to the other aspects of the economy. So, but essentially, I can summarize by saying, one, that the economy is very, the fundamentals are right, and that as a bank, we are quite covered.
Thank you, Dr. Abolu. So as we begin to reach the end of the presentation on slide 21, clearly what we have here is more of a confidence crisis, which in economic terms is significant, because in any scenario or building any model, the confidence factor basically, is the key factor as to the efficacy of that model. And more and more, as the confidence or the lack of confidence begins to seep into other markets, whether the real estate sector or other sectors, it has an effect on asset prices. And by implication, it will have significant effects for money supply, money movement and liquidity, and of course for the banking industry. So we are taking certain measures to navigate the market turbulence, one of which is to reduce our dependence on our foreign correspondent bank credit lines, and by one of the steps we are taking is that we are continuing to, in fact, we've always been quite aggressive and very knowledgeable on how to build our dollar balance sheet, and because of our subsidiaries,
It also provides us a very strong opportunity to maintain group treasury assets within Access Bank, as opposed to the leakage before, given our lack of a presence in an OECD country of having to maintain deposits with foreign banks. The next is that as a corporate, you know, decision, as opposed to regulatory one, even though the central bank has reduced its liquidity ratio to 30%, Access Bank, we have chosen to maintain a ratio of 40%. You know, we are already strongly capitalized, so that's not an issue. We will take advantage of our current low-cost structure to increase our deposit rates and expand our base of deposits. You know, we believe we can do so without significant impact on our net interest margin. We will continue to maintain our current emphasis on balanced maturity profiles, continue to take long-term money, and indeed, the issue of a second tranche of a local currency fixed income instrument is one that we're considering. Of course, finally, the fact that we have the lowest cost-to-income ratio amongst Nigerian banks means that we are not scared of the belt tightening, you know, that is to come. You know, once you've won a tight belt is a tight belt, you know. So in summary and in conclusion, on page 22, we believe that we are very well positioned for challenging times. Our key goals in 2008 are to deliver quality and sustainable earnings, to maintain a moderate risk appetite, but most importantly, insulate our balance sheet from systemic risk. And finally, we believe that, you know, by the end of this year, we would produce a performance scorecard that would distinguish the bank from its peers, both within Nigeria and Africa, based on our high standards of excellence. I would like to thank you once again for listening and participating on this conference call as we go into Q&A. Thank you very much. Elaine?
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press *2. Your first question comes from Dele Addison from Standard Bank. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Actually, my name is Dele Addison, and I'm calling from Standard Bank in London. Thanks very much for having this call. I just have a few questions that I'd be grateful if you could help me with. On your net interest income and fees, is it possible for you to split out the consumer versus the commercial element of the, both net interest income and fees for me, please? And also, I just wanted to get some sense on the kind of competitive pressure that you're experiencing on fees. I'm aware that there are some kind of more sort of non-value-added fees that are perhaps legacy of the kind of Nigerian banking system that are perhaps under pressure, such as commission on turnover and so on. So if you could just give some guidance on how the competitive pressures in the sector are affecting your ability to sort of continue to generate fees, that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Do you want me to run through all my questions now and then?
Yes, okay.
Just on margin lending, just for further clarity, do you have an approved list of stocks that you permit margin loans to be used for? And if so, what is the criteria for making this list? I mean, as we all know, the banks represent quite a significant part of the market capitalization. So I would think that much of the margin loans taken would have been directed into bank stocks, and clearly some banks are going to be hit by the performance of the market. So I'm just really trying to get a sense of the exposure on the value of the collateral. I mean, of course, you have this headroom, but if the value is diminishing and the collateral cannot be easily realized, then that's potentially a concern. Just on funding, a fairly quick question. To clarify, on the deposits that are considered time deposits, I just wanted to understand, can these be called at any time with the customer foregoing interest, or are they contractually bound to leave the money on deposit for the agreed time of the deposit? commitment. Also, just if you could just talk me through your Pan-African strategy briefly, that would be helpful. And finally, your thoughts on further sector consolidation would be helpful. Thank you. I know that's a lot of questions.
Okay. I think what we'll do is that, thank you. Elaine, we'll take all the questions, because if not, we stand the risk of somebody, you know, not asking a question, and then we provide answers to them all.
Certainly. We will take our next question from Tartan Goliath from Renaissance Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, Akin team. Thank you very much, also from my side. Two questions. Firstly, if you hold the view that the share price is very, very cheap, and with the ability to actually buy back shares, is that something that you're looking at? You've got about 160, as you said, 160 billion naira on sort of liquid, not obviously not all that you can use, but that's an amount, and obviously you've got, as you say, $900 million of potential debt available as well. So is that something you'd be looking at, firstly? And secondly, regarding the book growth, the loan book growth, you said a lot of that was tied to what happened to commodity prices, or what happened to commodity prices in the first half of the year. Obviously, those commodity prices have come down, and therefore, are you seeing basically the loan book hitting a brick wall, so to speak? Thank you.
Okay. Next question, please.
We will take our next question from Mimua Oni from Stenabic IBTC.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, my name is Bumi Njigo from Stanley Advocacy Research, but I have some questions. The first one has to do with the retail banking. Besides, I'd like to know what retail banking contributes to the bottom line, as well as what products, which your products actually contribute to more, and what is the benefit to you.
It's amazing that you are closest to us physically, but yours is a voice we can't hear. Can you speak louder?
Can you hear me now? Hello.
Okay, we'll hear.
Hello.
Yes, correct.
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead. Yes, you can.
Okay. Well, my questions have to do with your retail banking. First of all,
yes.
I'd like to know what percentage retail banking contributes to your bottom line, and then as well as which products are actually contributing the most, and what is the percentage contribution of those products?
Okay.
Hello? Yeah?
Yeah, we've got that. Okay.
All
Any
right,
other questions?
Yeah. No, thank you for now. Thank you.
We will take our next question from Rudolf Horn from Investec.
Hello, Ike. Hopefully you can hear me better than the Lagos call.
Yes, I can.
Good. Okay, on slide 10, just with respect to your 40% liquid assets that you keep, I'm just trying to see, that would be your cash and government securities, which is about 160 million naira.
Deposit, yes.
To the 40%, so maybe you can just explain that to us. Second question.
You compare it to deposits. It's a percentage of deposits. But anyway, no problem. I'll give you the actual figure.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay.
Second question, just on, you know, on your weathering the storm comments of reducing your dependence on foreign correspondent bank credit lines. Could you give us an indication of to what extent the reduced credit lines for trade would then have an impact on your profitability Because, you know, obviously funding these trading assets does generate some fees. And if I understand it correctly, maybe you can just explain that you would now have to use on-balance sheet activity to actually fund these trading assets if you're not going to deal with
quite correct,
that.
Quite correct. Correct.
And then... Yeah, oh, that's fine. We'll stop with that. Thank you.
Okay, fair enough. Elaine, are there more questions or should we exhaust these? What do you think?
We have three more questions.
Okay, let them ask, please.
Okay. We'll take our next question from Natalia Choga from Emerging Markets Management.
Hello. I just wanted to say thanks for these great results. My question was basically also related to the lines of credit and more specifically to foreign exchange exposure. How exposed would you be both on the positive and negative side to depreciation in the Naira?
Okay. You want to know as at 30th December, sorry, September, or as at now?
Whatever, both, if that's possible.
Okay.
We will take our next question from Fabian Constant from BNP Paribas.
Good morning, gentlemen. Congratulations for your presentation, which was very comprehensive. I just had a question regarding your last slide regarding your goals in 2008. You mentioned in point two that you want to insulate your balance sheet from systemic risks. Would like you to elaborate a bit on what systemic risks you are thinking about. Are there international risks or local risks? Elaboration. Thank you.
Okay.
We'll take our next question from Edward Giatti from AIG Investments.
Okay. Hello there. I have three questions. One is that what percentage of your liabilities and assets is in U.S. dollars and in Naira? Second question is what is your targeted ROA and ROE for the next 3 years? And has this changed from when you last came into the market for your capital raising? And the third question is, what is your current position in terms of your non-performing loans compared to your total advances? And the last question is, do you have a targeted loan-to-deposit ratio?
Okay. Excellent question.
We will now take our next question from Sruti Patel from Nations Capital.
Morning, Ike and the team. First of all, thanks very much for the presentation. I think it's one of the best levels of disclosure we've had from a Nigerian bank for a quarterly set of results. I just have a very simple question, actually. I'm quite interested in your branch expansion plans and where you are currently expanding. Is it in Lagos or... is it in other regions?
Okay.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We will now move...
So, Elaine, can we...
Yes?
Can we start answering the questions?
Certainly.
Excellent. Okay. I'm going to repeat the questions, and then the team will respond based on the affinity of the question to the jobs we do. The first question was from Standard Bank. I think, I'm not sure if the name was Dele Additional. One was net income and fees. What portion is consumer? What portion is commercial? And are we seeing competitive pressure on fees? The next is the margin lending approved list of stocks and criteria. Then there was one on deposits, consider time deposits, can they be called or are they contractually bound? And we should talk you through the Pan-African strategy. I think Herbert will take all these questions.
Okay. With respect to the net interest income and fees, typically what you find is that
our retail banking strategy has not contributed significantly to our total income. All right, retail banking, in terms of contribution to income as well as balance sheet, is around about 2%. All right, so it is not significant at all. Okay, in the presentation, of course, you saw what commercial banking contributes, which is around about 55%, close to 55% in terms of balance sheet, and about the same, quite close in terms of the income. Okay, so in terms of the competitive pressures on with respect to how it affects our income line, we do not see that there is any impact that you would find coming from retail banking. Now, commercial banking income is very resilient, all right, because quite frankly, following the value chain model, all right, what you tend to see is that the fees are already cutthroat as they are, all right, and so we do not expect to see further reduction in commission on fees and all of that deriving from our commercial banking business. You know, so that I think should be able to answer the question with respect to our net interest income and fees. Now, coming down to the question of margin, what we've tried to do over time is to bring down assets, or rather bring down eligible securities based on, first of all, sectors that we are willing to accept. And apart from that, we look at other considerations. For instance, what is the liquidity of the stock? We look at the fundamentals of the specific companies, etc. So yes, we do have an approved list of eligible stock. And if you ask me today, that approved list does not exceed 10 different stocks on the Nigerian Stock Exchange. Okay? Now, not only do we have an approved list, we have approved limits for specific stocks. All right? So irrespective of how liquid a particular stock is, because we know that at different points in time, the market can go into a downward spiral. All right? What we've tried to do is that based on fundamentals, okay, we've basically looked at ourselves and said, okay, how much are we willing to be exposed to specific stocks and different.
We are currently experiencing an interruption in today's conference call. Please stand by patiently. The conference should resume shortly. Thank you.
The conference will resume.
Thank you, Elaine. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to apologize for the break in transmission. It's one of the infrastructural challenges we have in Africa, which also presents opportunities. That's why I guess the telecoms companies make so much money. But I think Herbert was responding to questions, you know, from Dele and Standard Bank. I think he was just talking about deposits.
Yes. Back to the issue of funding. Typically, what you find under deposits, under tenured funds, are deposits that cannot be recalled. What tends to happen is that if you know you are under significant pressure by a particular customer, all right, to call in the deposit, the best we tend to do is basically lending against his own deposit. They are typically contractual, and therefore, you know, in terms of breaking those deposits, it's not something that can very easily happen. Now, as far as our Pan-African strategy is concerned, we've gone through what we refer to as phase one of our Pan-African strategy, and what we're doing right now is absorbing the entities which we have created and basically turning them around to make sure that they become proper profit-making entities, all right, before we go into the phase two. I think phase one is coming up positively. We are seeing the entities begin to form into proper banks, flowing from the presentation which I made in terms of the value chain model and what we refer to as our one bank concept, which basically involves chasing our corporates across the continent wherever we are present, and of course applying the value chain model for those corporates in those respective jurisdictions in which they operate. So we have come to the end of phase one of our Pan-African strategy and want to absorb it before we basically move on to the next phase of it. On further consolidation, there is a lot of talk around it at this time, but let me just quickly say that if people thought Nigerian banks had egos when they had shareholders funds of 20 billion naira, you can begin to imagine what it is now when people have shareholders funds in excess of $1 billion. So it's not going to be as easy as anybody imagines, because again, there's nothing that is regulatory induced. But what you will probably see over time is that those who are not able to compete under the new market regime may find themselves looking for sweetheart deals with institutions where they think they can best domicile their franchises. So it's not something that can happen very easily. You can have franchises that are reducing in terms of size and strength, But in terms of a combination or consolidation happening very quickly, you're not likely to see it. Of course, you could see a situation, as always, where 10 banks, for instance, control a very significant market share, all right, and the remaining 14 banks or whatever find themselves at a very small level in terms of market share. But that is not enough to force most banks, if you ask me, into a consolidation arrangement.
Thank you very much, Herbert. The second question came from the gentleman from Renaissance. I'm sorry I couldn't write down your name, forgive me, but Ebenezer, could you... I think the two questions were one to do with would we consider a share buyback, and then the issue of the loan book growth and commodity prices.
Well, in terms of the share buyback, those are measures that have been introduced by the regulators, you know, in collaboration with operators. We're looking at the measures very closely. There are clear benefits, you know, in terms of share buyback. We've explored that. We're having internal discussions with our board, you know, within senior management, and clearly we're looking at all the options available to us, and we shall be taking appropriate measures to ensure that there is no, you know, unmanaged erosion, you know, of shareholder value. So clearly we understand the benefits of the measures, and we are looking at all the various benefits, and we shall take appropriate steps as we deem necessary at the appropriate time to ensure that that the process is adequately managed. Now, in terms of the loan book, again, we're looking at that very clearly. Exposure today, we want to maintain, what is important to us is to keep our liquidity position. We're looking at that very, very clearly. And very quite obviously, the loan book, you know, will have to be curtailed. We clearly will step down in terms of term lending, in terms of facilities that will not in themselves, you know, create liabilities. So those will be measures that we're looking at, and we'll ensure that the loan book growth is very clearly, the loan book growth will not grow, you know, at the kind of levels that we have been seeing.
But clearly, given the fact that, a lot of the trade obligations that we had were facilities that were booked at commodity prices that went up 50%.
Yes.
And as those commodity prices are corrected, we see that the pro forma invoices by which people are opening their letters of credit have also reduced in value. So while the market share of the large importers has not reduced, you know, the actual cost of importation has gone down significantly. Now, yes, you asked a question about its impact on earnings. Well, I think that was somebody else who asked that question. So when we get there, you know, but are we hitting a brick wall? Yes. I mean, we see that beginning to happen. The lady, I think, Bumi from Standard IBTC?
It was.
Sorry. From Standard Bank, Standard IBTC Research. I think Herbert has answered the issue about retail bank contribution to the bottom line. But what I will reveal to you is that, interestingly, we are, our ATMs and our Visa units are profit centers. So we understand that that's not the case for many Nigerian banks, but it appears that we seem to have gotten it right. Now, in actual, in the quantum of income, it is not significant as a percentage of balance sheet for now, but understand that today our ATMs and our Visa card business already make profits. And when I say make profits, in excess of 100 million naira each unit.
The other thing to just add, Bumi, is that Access Bank remains the wholesale commercial bank. And we play at the corporate, at the wholesale commercial names. Retail is only important insofar as it contributes to our value chain operation. All right. So in backing the stakeholder group, yes, you will see some retail names, but those names are names that are directly tied to the corporate that we bank. So if you're banking a corporate like MTN and therefore you bank its staff, your retail strategy only extends to, for instance, the staff of MTN. Same thing for the other wholesale corporates that we do business with. And so for us, we don't aim to be a retail bank. We remain a wholesale commercial bank, and whatever retail products we provide is to make sure that it is purely in line with our value chain structure.
Rudolph of Investec, you had a question with the liquidity ratio computation. The computation is certain liquid assets as compared to total deposits. And I've asked Shehi to give me the actual figures.
Just he wants to know what was the total liquid assets and what was the total deposit.
Total qualifying liquid assets is 64 plus 76.
So all the government securities and 64 billion out of the cash and short term funds, which totals how much?
That's 136.
136 billion as a percentage of the total deposits of 280 or thereabouts. So that's the computation. Now, you said reducing dependence on foreign correspondents and the impact on our business. Interestingly, actually, it doesn't necessarily impact your earnings. It impacts your liquidity because it simply means that as opposed to utilizing foreign trade lines, okay, you actually buy the foreign exchange immediately, which means that you have to grow your deposit base and your liquidity base to enable you fund it. Ironically, actually, you make more money this way. That's the irony of it. If you looked at our commission and fees growth and you related it to our net interest margin growth, you will find that our commission and fees did not grow in tandem with our net interest margin. And this is because the spreads on confirmation line facilities are much lower than the spreads on loan activities in Nigeria. So the irony about it is that we will make more money. The customers will make less money because there might be issues about their ability to pass this cost over. The growth in foreign currency lending funded by correspondent banks has been extremely salutary on the balance sheets of the borrowing corporates. Now, with regard to lines of credit and FX exposure, and our exposure as at 30th September and today, I wish I could send you a slide, but you see, our foreign currency exposure works in either of two ways. One is on our trading book, and the other exposure we carry would be a function of the inability of the borrower to provide Naira to meet maturing letter of credit obligations. The second scenario is actually an exposure we monitor on a dynamic basis, but it's more out of internal rules of behavior or based on trends that we have assessed over time. But with regard to our FX exposure at any point in time, our FX exposure is a function of our open position limit. Our aggregate open position limit is actually regulatory, and it is 15% of our shareholders' funds. And today, that is how much? Almost $200
million? $200 million.
Approximately $200 million. And that's our balance sheet. And also take note, however, that we have currency limits within this position. So we can take positions Naira dollar up to the extent of our open position limit. We can also take positions Naira sterling up to 5% of our shareholders' funds, Naira euro 5% of our shareholders' funds, and I think that is it. So basically, it's a Naira dollar game. The volatility in those markets over the past 3 years has been very narrow, actually. And therefore, if you look at our value at risk computations, I think the maximum we have seen on our Naira dollar FX position would be about 100 million Naira. Now, with regard to third currencies, it's an area that we are beginning to move into very cautiously. But right now, we have system-based stop-loss limits of $1 million.
Me too.
So, I mean, that basically tells you that we are not really doing third currencies quite actively. So, as at 30th September, if I recall, I think that we had a value at risk computation then of about 50 million Naira. And as at now,
If I add our position, our pound sterling dollar position, I think we'll be about $150 million, 150 million naira at risk today. Now, the next question was, how do we insulate our balance sheet from systemic risk? And most particularly, what are the systemic issues that we see? There are several. The first, of course, is that between Access Bank, the parent, and our subsidiaries, we have large foreign currency balances that we are building up. Today, I would say that our net position would be about $250 million in terms of net position with foreign banks. So we have a very dynamic, anyway, basically, to be honest, we have exposure to AA banks or stronger. There are not many AAA banks left, if there are any. But, you know, one of the rules is that we have exposure only, we limit our exposures to AA-rated banks, AA, Fitch, and S&P-rated banks. The other thing, of course, is that because we now have Access Bank UK, and we now have an ability to go direct into gilts and treasuries, you will also see us, you know, begin to manage our group treasury, you know, in a much more, strategic manner, as opposed to depending on our correspondents to do that, you know, for us. Now, locally, there are a number of systemic risk issues, you know, at play.
Right.
One of them, of course, is the interbank market, either as a source of creating assets or as a means of funding your balance sheet. The second is that certain sectors, you have borrowers whose funding does not come from a single bank, and therefore the effects of problems in one bank can easily lead to contagion for another bank. This is aside from syndication type transactions. So we have also looked at those sectors, okay, and we are very warily, you know, basically changing, if you like, you know, the risk acceptance criteria to remove the likelihood that we deal with names that will be dealing with banks, you know, that could have problems. Another area that we look at is that because of our value chain strategy, obviously, the rate at which we feel a tremor in one industry, you know, affects the entirety of our system very quickly. So we have to move into industry segments that are highly liquid, as opposed to those that, in fact, in other words, we are moving to where we've always been in, but we are concentrating our business on net surplus generating industries, as opposed to net borrowing industries. Other systemic risk areas are, even within Nigeria, areas that are prone to the challenges of unrest. For example, upstream oil and gas in the Niger Delta. So we have actually concentrated, we've moved our lending activities from the south-south part of the country. We've wound down our lending activities in the south-south part of the country, which have been greatly affected by the type of things that are happening there as a result of militant activity and so on. So, and this is a dynamic process. So literally every week, we look at our balance sheet. We play what-if scenarios. This week, we did a what-if scenario analysis with 10, I think there were 10 scenarios that we considered. You know, next week, we do what-if with 10 scenarios, an additional 10 scenarios, and we're constantly, you know, reviewing. We're reviewing this constantly.
You can go on and on. We've come now to very, very basic things, paying a lot more scrutiny to customers and their transactions, because when the market starts going through a downward spiral like this, you could find customers who otherwise had strong practices all of a sudden doing very crazy things, writing checks on unfunded accounts, attempting to use overdraft lines for other things. So we have now basically started reviewing all our assets, all right, and basically ensuring that our operational risk guys are basically scrutinizing all the transactions going through to ensure that we do not find ourselves exposed or duly, all right, to an environment where we have a very, very negative systemic risk issues. So it's an ongoing thing, like I said.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are currently experiencing an interruption to this conference call. Please stand by patiently. The conference will resume shortly. Thank you.
The conference can resume.
Thank you, Elaine. Sorry again for the interruptions, but let me go to Shein quickly on the questions that were raised by the guy from AIG. Shein, go on.
All right. Edward asked what percent of our assets and liabilities are in U.S. dollars. It's about 15%. This is strictly on balance sheet. We also have essentially on the contingent side something like $1 billion out there. So I'm just saying on the balance sheet about 10%. You also asked about the targeted ROA and ROE. Now, on the ROA side, what you find is that over the 3 year period, we are looking at something like 4%. And in terms of ROE, even though we just raised capital last year, you will see that it was 19% last year. It's going to go up to 25% over the next 3 years. And as part of the presentation, there was a slide that talked about the NPL to loan ratio. Today is something like 2.25%. You also asked about the targeted loan to deposit ratio. Our targeted loan is about 65%, which is below the CBN limit of 80%.
Shruti asked a question about our branch expansion plans in Nigeria. Where are we going? We have always maintained what we call an LPA strategy, Lagos, Port Harcourt, Abuja. Given the challenges in Port Harcourt, we feel that at about between 8 and 10 branches, we have sufficient coverage, so we are through with Port Harcourt. Abuja is an area that we're expanding quite aggressively. I think, you know, we had 3 branches in Abuja last financial year. Now we are about 6, and we'll close the year with, I think, 8. And the rest of the branches are mainly in Lagos. And in Lagos, a lot of our activity is concentrated in the Lagos, Victoria Island area, Apapa area, Ikeja area, which is, you know, and basically what we've described are those areas that account for about 70% of industry assets and liabilities. Elaine said that there was a gentleman from African Alliance who came in who had one question. I think we'll take that as our last question, and then we'll summarize the call and conclude. Elaine? Yes, you said there was a gentleman with a question.
We have Steve Mutsi from African Alliance.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We've had a lot of pointers coming through from the debt management office regarding infrastructure financing. And a lot of other banks have already indicated that they're participating through syndicated loans. In your presentation, you did point to a lot of working capital finance, at least from the way we interpreted your presentation. Are you going to participate in these syndicated loans, and to what extent?
When our chief economist was addressing the issue of the fundamentals and stated that they were strong, but however highlighted the fact that there was a confidence challenge or crisis of confidence coming as a result of experiences in the stock market, and the fact that this could seep, or this was seeping into other markets, for example the real estate market and so on, and affecting asset prices. The implication basically is that a lot of Nigerians are seeing their net worth reduce significantly in a very, very, very short space of time. And this hasn't happened, you know, for a long time, if it has happened before. Now, the challenge, therefore, is that, you know, infrastructure finance is not something you do at a time when people are jittery, as you can imagine. Because it then throws away and throws up issues against all your models of repayment, which tend to, you know, go in some instances as long as 20 years. So the risks of infrastructure finance are becoming a bit heightened. Not necessarily because the fundamentals are low, but just simply because there's a lot of uncertainty around the market. So our position for now is that this is not something that we should be doing, and I'm just talking straight, and that we will take comfort if we begin to see clearer direction, you know, from at the macro level in terms of management of of the issues that will address the confidence problems. So that is our position on infrastructure finance. Now, however, if there are deals whereby, you know, that are linked to a specific off-taker, and we can assess the risks of that off-taker, you know, or the project sponsors, you know, have very strong cash flows from other alternative projects existing, for example, you know, then we look at such scenarios. But in the classic sense, that is not infrastructure finance. So that is really our position, you know, with regards to that. At this stage, I would just like to express our appreciation to everybody who has dialed in for listening. I think probably also for the quality of the questions we've been asked. One thing that we take away from all these sessions is that these questions make us think even deeper about our business and tend to always add value to that which we do. At Access Bank, we have set for ourselves very high standards of operational excellence. And the irony of life is that we have always said that a time will come where that investment in these high standards will pay off, because the market conditions will punish people who are operating at lower standards. And we begin to see that that is playing out. And so therefore, we feel that, you know, we are set for a year, even if 9 months, you know, of high quality earnings that are sustainable and that will distinguish us from our peers and beyond. Thank you very much for participating, and see you in 90 days' time. Bye.
That concludes our conference for today. For those of you wishing to review this conference, a recording of today's call will be posted onto your company's website. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.